Hey guys, welcome in. It's episode 41 of the Canadian Comedy Hall of Fame podcast. I'm Chad Noonan. As always, phenomenal episode, great episode, huge episode, gigantic episode. Today, I have the cast and the creator of Davy and Jonesy's Locker. This is a brand new show just launched this week on Amazon Prime here in Canada, Hulu in the States. It's so funny. This show's amazing. I watched it with my daughter last week, Molly. She loved it. We only watched three episodes, but she can't wait to finish the season, which we will do this week. I laughed the whole way through. It's definitely one of those shows where it's for everyone, really. The show I think was originally made for teenagers, but it's for everyone. So we'll get to that in just a moment. First, I want to tell you about today's sponsor, and that's Carnivore Club. Now, I love nothing more weeknight, weekend, whenever, than making charcuterie. Giant charcuterie fan. And that's exactly what Carnivore Club delivers right to your door. Yeah, I said it. You don't even have to leave the house. The Carnivore Club is coming to you. They have three boxes to choose from. I always go for the classic box. So this is like for your traditional charcuterie lovers. You get things like prosciutto, sopressata, chorizo. It's perfect for me. It's awesome. Look for a video. I'm going to put a video out soon. What I love about this is when the box comes to your door, you get like different meats from different artisans, kind of like each telling their own story and passions through the recipes. So you really get like the taste of Canada in these boxes. They're amazing. Two other boxes to choose from. That's the complete box. That's like if you're hosting. If you're hosting, you'll want to do charcuterie, which is the best for hosting. You'll want the complete box, or if you're doing it once in a while. The complete box is for everything you need to build a charcuterie board, and it's carefully curated selection of pairings. It's amazing. Hey, beef jerky lovers, if you're a jerky lover, you gotta go for the snack box. Like each monthly box contains a variety of jerky and meat snacks from different artisans across Canada. It's amazing. It's awesome. Artisan, handcrafted meats delivered to your door. It's carnivoreclub.co. Like I said, I'm gonna have an unboxing video of my classic box that I get just so you can see all the awesome items that come into it. But like, don't wait for that video. I'm telling you, it's amazing. Carnivoreclub.co is where you go to get amazing artisan handcrafted meats delivered to your door. Okay, let's get into today's episode. It's about the show Davy and Jonesy's Locker. I already let you know, I friggin' love this show. It is hilarious. It is for everyone. It is well-written. It is visually funny. So many things. Little rundown. The show is kind of like a coming of age centered around a relationship between two inseparable best friends named Davy and Jonesy. Everything's going fine in their life until they discovered that their locker is actually a portal to the multiverse. And then mayhem ensues in the best way. The show is bizarre. It kind of gives you like alternate versions of their high school life, and it all takes place inside of high school. It's amazing. I loved it. The show creator, Evany Rosen, was on this show. That's who my first interview is with. Evany is, she's a comedic mind, a comedic genius who created this show about the she combined comedy and the multiverse, which is amazing. She was the co-creator of the original series New Eden and a founding member of the Canadian Comedy Award-winning comedy troupe Picnic Face, which Picnic Face has been brought up many times on this show. She's worked with CBC, Crave, Disney, DreamWorks, Apple TV, the Cartoon Network, all over. She just got married. It was a ton of fun talking to Evany. Here it is, my interview with the creator of Davy and Jonesy's Locker. It's Evany Rosen on the Canadian Comedy Hall of Fame podcast. Freaks and Geeks vibes when I was watching the preview, and then the media people like sent me all the stuff and they said Freaks and Geeks was like a buzzword in the media packet, I think you call it. So I was like, okay, I feel like I'm on. Freaks and Geeks, one of the greatest shows of all time, by the way.
Yeah.
Was that consciously your thought when you were creating the show?
I wouldn't say that was. I think a lot of my influences were just like, and shows I loved in high school were just kind of infused into what I was doing. So I wasn't really trying to emulate one particular high school show, but I would say the two that I think had the most impact on me and have kind of combined to make this bizarre show would be Freaks and Geeks and Strangers with Candy. Because my show's really absurdist and campy and kind of weird. So yeah, I wouldn't say I set out to do that, but I would certainly say it would be impossible to say that those two shows were not just natural influences on me and my style.
I feel like a lot of teen comedies that are out now aren't really geared towards teens, where I feel like teens, this is the target demo for this show. Like I have a 9-year-old daughter, and she watches a lot of like those Disney shows where they take place in a school and all that stuff, but they're for her. They're for like an 8 and 9-year-old. What do you think about that? Like this is for an audience where I don't think a lot of stuff is being made for this audience currently.
I think that's part of why, between you and me, I managed to kind of slip this show in and get it sold. But I think, in talking to Hulu, especially about what they wanted, they were like, we want something really unique that doesn't look like anything else on our platform and is for like older teens in a way that like kids in college and people in their 20s, hopefully, and millennial parents and stuff can all enjoy. But it's not for that younger Wizards of Waverly Place kind of thing. Like, it's not for the where we're pretending it's teens, but exactly it's for 9 to 12 year olds because we always demo up a bit. So it is for like mid-range teens and then hopefully older people looking back down. But you're right, it is a specific area that's kind of untapped, especially when you're doing something in this context like I am, that isn't the humor is very like it's very absurdist, but it's I think it's like more mature and sort of meta. But there's not like it's not Euphoria, there's not like a lot of heavy duty content, there's not a lot of sex and drugs in it. So like your 9-year-old could watch it, it might go or she might love it. Like I've showed it to my nieces and nephews who are younger, and they're like, and the 12-year-olds are like, okay, wait, what does this mean and what's that? And the younger ones are like, it's fun to look
It
at.
looks cool.
But so I think there's like a it's doing an interesting thing, I hope, because it is for that older teen audience, but there's nothing a younger kid couldn't watch. Sort of like I thought about it a lot. I don't know if you watched The Simpsons as a kid, I assume we all did. But when you watch it as a really little kid and you're just missing the references, but that's okay. And then you watch it again and you get more, and you watch it again and you get more. But even at 9, you're like, I like this. I don't know who Howard Hughes is yet, but I'm sure I will eventually. I was sort of that was in my mind as well when I sort of was designing the style of humor and demographic. That was a really long answer. I'm sorry. Jesus.
No, that's fine. I even do that now with my daughter. We watch like Bob's Burgers. That's like our show we watch. She's not getting a lot of the stuff that Tina's saying in the show, but she likes it 'cause it's a cartoon, and I like it 'cause it's funny and well written and, hilarious.
Exactly right. This is kind of what I'm going for. We'll see if I succeeded, but that was the intent.
Yeah, it comes out March 22nd. I think you succeeded just from what I've seen so far on Prime
Bless you, bless you.
Video,
Thank you.
Prime Video in Canada, and Hulu in the States. I want to talk a little bit about your career. Where are you from? That's what it's anywhere I see, it's like Ontario. And I was like, oh, okay, that's doesn't narrow
I thought you were going to say untitled. Yeah, it's a
it
secret.
down. Untitled.
Untitled from Untitled. No, I grew up in Toronto, like a born and raised,
Okay, cool.
which is bit unicorn of me. And then I went out to Halifax for a long time, and that's where my comedy career started. I was in a group many moons ago called Picnic Face, and we did live sketch there for years. And then we had one extremely short-lived show on the now defunct Comedy Network. But that was how I got my start in TV and certainly in comedy. So I did improv and stand-up and all kinds of stuff out there. I used to tour in the Maritimes, which was a really interesting way to cut my teeth as like a 20-year-old stand-up. Kind of emceeing legions all over the Maritimes, which I loved. It was so fun and I learned a lot very quickly. And then I eventually moved back when Picnic Face shockingly did not get renewed for another season, the Canadian story. And so I came back here for Post, and then I kind of stayed and continued my career from there back here.
Legions are my jam. That is where I do
Yeah.
the majority of like tonight, two shows tonight. I don't know why I'm promoting myself now.
I'd love
I'm
to
in
know where your legions are tonight.
Carlton Place Legions tonight. So that's so funny that yeah, especially out east, like Legions is where you do it. There's like what, four clubs in the Maritimes?
Oh yeah, like Truro, New Brunswick can't support, or Truro, Nova Scotia. Apologies, Maritimers. Sorry, just slip of the tongue. But places like that, then that was a random example. Let me try that again. Truro, Nova Scotia can't sustain necessarily a full-time yuck yucks. So the legions are like, they do like these, yeah, like yucks pop-ups, basically. I used to remember, and this is so long ago for me, but I would remember sometimes there'd be a club. Moncton had a club. And then other places, it would just be like, yeah, for tonight, here is comedy. You're welcome.
It's a club. Those shows are fun, though. I love them. They're great.
They're so fun. And having to get the old guys who did not know there was going to be comedy at the Legion tonight and are just there to play darts and kind of having to get them on side is a really good way to learn how to bum, I would say. Yeah. That's part of cutting your teeth, for sure.
Exactly. I had Mark on the show, and we got completely off track, so I never asked him how Picnic Face started. Like, what was the start of Picnic Face? How did you guys come together to create this, like, kind of... I'm searching for the word now. What is something cult following is what I'm looking for. Comedy thing in Canada, winner of Canadian Comedy Awards.
Canadian Comedy Awards. Yes.
Now defunct. Yes. Yes.
So much defunct. That's a great question. I think how it started. I met Kyle and Mark first. They knew each other from out west, even though Kyle's from Ontario as well, but some BC improv camp situation they had met. And then Kyle and I did a play together at my university, which is the University of King's College. And the play was like heavily improvised. And I had done improv in high school and stuff. This was in my first year of university. And there was sort of like a vibe recognized there. And we thought each other was funny and did improv. So he was like, oh yeah, me and this guy, Mark, want to start an improv troupe. And, you know, inevitably we need a girl. So you kind of want to get on board with that. So I did. And then we did shows together at my college, like in their theater space for the rest of that school year, I remember. And then I came home to Toronto for the summer to work at a Starbucks in Forest Hill, which was a deep, deep nightmare. And they started doing, that's when they met Andy Bush, and he was a director. So then he started doing like the film stuff, and they started putting up. So I came back and they were like, we're a sketch troupe now. There's 16 people in it. And I was like, oh, what? And we started doing these live shows, and then the group kind of got whittled down to the seven of us. And then Scott Roman joined, and then that was it. And that was the group, and it was the eight of us after that. So that was sort of that's the genius from my perspective. But that early period was like, I don't even think we were Picking Face yet. We may have been Pumpkin Face briefly. I can't remember. Mark might.
Was there a radio special in there as well at some point? Did you guys do a special on radio?
We did do a special on radio, and I've not thought about it since until right now. And I couldn't tell you anything
That's my Nardwar moment. My deep cut. I'm going to play the episode for you now. No, I don't have it.
Imagine. And roll clip.
It was on CBC, though, so it's somewhere. They have an archive. Like,
it's somewhere. Some male robot's carrying it around the building, I'm sure.
By the way, this is my off topic. Your drink, and it might be the camera, looks like blood.
It does look like blood, isn't it? I'm actually just drinking like a sort of healthful Acerola cherry situation to get my immune system
like
up.
The color of blood, which I thought... Which like kind of play? Yeah. Okay, this is a stretch, but into the
goth vibe.
Yeah, well, I was gonna say into like the supernatural aspect of the show.
Okay, big leap. I like it.
Was that?
I like it. That was really good segue.
Was it? Okay, good. were you like a sci-fi kid growing up? Was it sci-fi was like totally your jam? Sci-fi, comedy, all that. Yeah.
Definitely. I think it would have been really hard to write this without having that kind of love of sci-fi and that influence. I would say like, and especially the kind of sci-fi that is like those Isaac Asimov short stories and Star Trek episodes. Star Trek, huge for me. So definitely that feeling, because we needed to come up with like a different universe. And so in every episode of the show, basically the synopsis of the show is the girls, are in a regular normal high school, and they're bored and they're over it, and they're like we're cooler than everyone, the science, and everyone thinks they're weird, and then they don't realize that their science teacher, played by Dan Byrne, is like a disgraced quantum physicist, and he's put a portal in their locker, and they accidentally go through it after screwing up the school dance, and they're trying to like hide some evidence, and they get sucked into this portal, and then they're like, okay, great, we're on an adventure in the multiverse. And the kind of burn on them is that they're just an alternate version of their high school with alternate versions of their peers who they were trying to escape in every episode. So with that kind of episodic premise in mind, it was really like thinking, like drawing on sci-fi and campy and 60s beat sci-fi was like a really great way to kind of generate these world ideas. So there's like, and you'll like, for sci-fi fans watching, I think you'll like, you'll, when I say there's a kind of Logan's Run episode, you'll feel that one. And when I say there's kind of a, I can't even think of any others now, but there's every other one is an episode of Star Trek. You'll, the vibe's there for sure. Cause I really love that. And it was fun to bring it together with comedy.
And I read the music is really important in this show. When you were writing it, did you have like music in mind, or did that come kind of like after the fact where you're like, oh, this would be a great song for this part? Cause like Courtney Love, I think, is on the soundtrack.
That was, I mean, I really wanted a whole song. That was like, I didn't have like a grand design for the music of the show, but my music supervisor, Michaela Simmons, who did my last show, New Eden, and is brilliant. She and I were talking about, you know, what we wanted the music to be and kind of not trying to pander and really be like, okay, well, what do we think is cool? And what did we think is cool in high school? And like, let's just play around with that and see where we get to. So I was like, and from very early days, I was like, if I could have a whole song in this show, my life would be complete. And I knew it was a long shot and I knew it was hard. And I also knew that Courtney kind of controls the rights still, which is cool. But also like, then she gets this, like, it's not just about money, which we didn't have anyway, but it's also about like, does she think the show's worth having her music in? So finally it reached a point where Michaela was like, I think you have to write a letter to Courtney Love.
Oh, that's
and this
cool.
Was like, I was like, you've got to be kidding me. Like I was like, yeah. Oh no, what a humiliating exercise in a way, and kind of a childhood dream, but also like, oh my god, this was like, writing that letter was harder than writing the entire show. But I finally did it. I sat down and did it. There's a Napster joke in it. Very embarrassing, but it worked, which was to my amazement. And I'll never know if she read it, but Michaela's like, no, she would have had to read it. Like someone from the team would have passed it along. So we got the song. So Rockstar is by Hole is like in the opening sequence of the show in the first episode. And that was, I Can Die Happy Now.
That's amazing. Yeah, that's awesome. I always say like, just like to people in general in comedy, like just go for it. Like just, I mean, what's the worst that happens is she says no. Like is that the worst?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. I have a couple fun ones for you. This is my this question is my beef with IMDb, and that is that nobody's IMDb page is correct. I had Lorne Michaels on the show, and his is wrong. How is Lorne Michaels wrong?
Anyways, did you reveal that to him? Did he know that until you told him?
No, I kept it like really, really cool. I asked like my main question was like, who does the best Lorne impression? Which he actually gave me like a really like thoughtful, put out answer, which was like
thorough
awesome.
Answer
like, yeah, a thorough like 3-minute response about all the people have done his impressions of him over the years. I was like, this is great. He's awesome.
And the crazy part is the person who does it best is Courtney Love.
Yeah, it was Courtney Love all along. Yeah.
That's Lorne Michaels' impression. Anyway, I'm so sorry, go on.
Okay, so what do you know your first credit on IMDb?
I have no idea.
Okay.
Because okay. Is it? It might be New Eden. It might be Pig and Face, or it might be a weird cartoon.
It's not. I think it's a short film. I'm not really sure. There wasn't a lot of info. It's called Slug.
Oh my god! Yes. Okay. That is a very low budget, no budget short film that I was in 15 years ago. So that
2009.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. That should be right at the top.
Yeah. Were you in the, what was Slug? Was it about a slug?
No, Slug, if I recall, was about counterfeit money. And I was kind of a cool girl who smoked and knew about counterfeit money and like explained this to the male character leads in the movie about how you can spot a counterfeit.
Yeah.
That's all I remember.
I like the premise of Slug. What did it mean?
I hope you can find it.
I'm gonna search for Slug. What did it mean for you, or what does it mean for you to like produce Canadian comedy in Toronto, to like make these shows in Canada, and then they go on big networks, huge platforms in the States like Hulu? Like, what does it mean to like support the industry here?
It's really exciting. I feel really excited about that. And we complain a lot about the Canadian industry here as well, you know, I'm sure. And that's easy to do. But I feel very lucky that I've gotten to make two shows now in Canada that were really the show I set out to make. And I had total creative control and I really got to make the show I meant to make. And New Eden, much as I still encourage everyone to watch it, didn't maybe find a home fully, though it was on Crave, and it's still there if you search for it. But we really got to make the show we wanted to make there. And then I felt so lucky that I got the opportunity to do that again in Canada, and this time with a US broadcaster attached. So I think we're going to be seeing that more and more with these kind of co-productions and with the streamers. And it's taken them some time to figure out like rest of world rights and stuff like this, of how we can do one there and one here and have that kind of come together. But I think with the success of things like Schitt's Creek and Letterkenny 2 in the States, there is just a way that I think we're going to have more and more opportunities to make like really great art and content here that gets seen elsewhere. And I really want to be a part of that because I think it's really important. And I think, you know, a lot of us have to move down south, and I get why. And I don't begrudge all my colleagues who have and are so successful. Certainly. But I think even there, like, I wish I could stay. I wish I could. So I hope to be able to be part of whatever growing shift that is that allows that to be just so.
So on this show, you write, you're the showrunner, created, you star in, you play the principal. Do one of those things give you more satisfaction than the other when working on a show? Or is it like it's satisfaction, but it all comes in different increments? Like, I like doing stand up because it's instant. I get that instant dopamine dump that I deserve. But I'm also like working on a kid's show right now, which is really cool because like I've been working on this show for a while and then I got to see a full episode yesterday. So like I got that gratification of all the hard work I put in for multiple weeks. Does like one of those things give you more satisfaction than the other when working on a show like this?
I mean, it all can be really satisfying and it can all be really hard depending on the day. I think that like, I'm definitely a writer first before I am a performer and act. I've always acted and performed, but it's never been my true calling, I think. And you know, New Eden was like, we were really co-starring in that. That was a real gauntlet and a thing to go through. And Kayla, my co-everything on that show and my best friend is such a talented actor that she gave me a lot of help. And in this show, I really knew that I was like, oh, I'll do a little cameo or something, but my role is not that big. I really just wanted to do something goofy so that I could really focus on the part of the job that I love most, which is, I love to write. I hate to write. No writer loves writing, even when we love it as our jobs, because it's a mind bender. But I really love show running. I really love the process of taking those scripts and those ideas and then bringing a team of creative people together and sitting around and figuring out how we're going to do this and kind of, okay, but what do we mean by this prop? And we've all interpreted it differently from the script. So how can we all figure it out together? And kind of that phase of taking it from script to screen is really exciting. I think because you really get to see the nuts and bolts of how something super creative that was just in your head comes to life, which is super exciting to me.
Yeah, the satisfaction at the end of it all when it's like finally on screen must be almost overwhelming to see all that, you know, that hard work and effort from idea to completed, like come to fruition.
It's wild. And it's wild too, because you work with so many people who have such a huge part in that and play such an important role. And then you on your own with the editors have this whole other like 6 month period after everybody's wrapped. And they've moved on and they're just waiting for the show to come out. So I've seen these people every day and I've watched these episodes like 100 times. And then, you know, something like the trailer comes out and I get to see everyone, you know, not just beyond the show, but people in the show, the cast and the crew and everyone reacting. And I'm like, oh, right. I feel like I see you guys every day, but you have no idea what's been going on for the last 8 months. And suddenly here this thing is. So it's also really fun to see people see what you went off and did with what they made. Because what you're seeing when you're doing it on set, you can't really fully imagine what the final product's going to look like either.
Here's something what I struggle with, and I always want to ask people this as well for my own selfishness, is when you see something for like that long, you've just seen it forever. Is there a part of you is like, is this still good? I've just seen it too much. I just don't know. Like, do you worry? Like, do the jokes still land? Is it still funny? I've seen it so many times. I struggle with that. I'm always like second guessing myself. I thought it was really good in the beginning, but after months of seeing it, I'm not sure.
I think that made me in many ways the biggest challenge of creating work and being a and seeing that work through as a showrunner and having to be the arbiter of what it is and what it isn't for so long. And when people ask me for advice about, you know, being like, you know, advice for being a showrunner, whatever, the number one advice I would really give is like, know your taste and then know your show. And you have to know what it is and you have to know what it isn't. And that doesn't mean you can't be super collaborative, but you have to kind of go into this, like, I call it like turbo mode, where you're just like, I know what it is, and I know what the comedy is, and I know what the comedy isn't, and I know the kind of joke we do and the kind of joke we don't. And then when you're watching it for the 50th time in the edit, exactly to your point, and you're like, well, I don't think it's funny anymore because I know when the joke's coming. Like, I can't be surprised. But I'm sure it's the same as cutting a horror movie where you're like, is this still scary? He's like, he's jumped through and said, here's Johnny so many times, so I'm not surprised. But you still have to, if you know what it is, I think you can get yourself into the place where you just trust that that's what you meant and you trust yourself from 6 months ago. And that's the hardest part. You also fortunately have people watching it all the time. You know, you have network executives and other people, but then also sometimes you have to fight for something that that's lost its flavor for you, but you know, it's good and you have to convince them that it's good because they don't get the joke. And that is where it really gets trippy.
Yeah, absolutely. I have one more question for you. I ask this of everyone. This is the Canadian Comedy Hall of Fame podcast. The Canadian Comedy Hall of Fame is a real thing, by the way. It is a real thing. We just had our induction last week. I know you don't know who's in and who's out of the Hall of Fame, but in your mind, who would you say this writer, comedian, stand-up, sketch performer, this person is a Canadian Comedy Hall of Famer?
Like living, or like, are you looking for like Gilda Radner and John Candy? Because I assume they made the cut.
Well, John Candy is in for sure. John Candy.
Is Gilda not?
Is Gilda Canadian?
Yeah, man. I'm pretty sure.
Oh my God.
Or maybe she was just up here.
I'm Googling it. I think she was up
here. Right. American.
At Second City. Yeah.
Okay.
But spend a lot of time here.
Okay. Well, yes. So I'm sure all of the usual suspects are in already. Yes. Okay. So can it be anybody?
It could be anybody. It could be a future Hall of Famer. It is just like, this person is like going to be in the Hall of Fame someday, if not already.
Okay. This is hard. There's so many people. I mean, oh my God, there's so many people. And there's people who are big. Like, I feel like Nathan Fielder must be on your list. And he's, you know, he really is, I think, like, doing the most exciting thing of all of us out there in the world.
Oh, my God. He's so great. And I think he's the first. You're my 83rd interview. And he's the first time that he's been mentioned. But
absolutely, no one's mentioned Nathan?
Nobody's mentioned Nathan yet. Yeah.
Okay. I'll make that mine. And I have another one, which is Mae Martin. They have a new show coming out, or they're about to start shooting, called Tall Pines. And Kayla Lorette, who I would also nominate. I don't nominate a lot of people. But Mae has done so much amazing things in their career, and in England, and now making a show in the States. I just think, I think Nathan and Mae are true Canadians. Not like, you know, obviously I'm sure Jim Carrey and people like that are on your list, but they're people who have, like, they've stopped being one of us in a way. Because they've been in Hollywood for so long. And I think Mae and Nathan are true Canadians who are doing, like, really next level shit.
Yeah. And like quintessential Canadian comedy. Like, there's a difference between like the Canadian aspect of and the American, like, their comedy is Canadian comedy, whatever that means. It makes sense in my mind. Thanks so much for doing this. Thanks for coming on my show. March 22nd on Prime in Canada and Hulu in the States. It's Davey and Jonesy's Locker. I appreciate this. This was a lot of fun. Thanks so much.
Chad, thanks so much. And just, I hope you kill it at the Carlton Legions tonight.
Give it up for Ebony. Oh, man, that was a lot of fun talking to Ebony. She was getting ready to go to Japan like the very next day for her honeymoon. So that was great that she took the time, and what a great show. I can't say it enough. In fact, the show is so good, we did the whole episode surrounding the show. The next interview. Well, it's actually one interview, but two people. One interview, two people. It continues on. It's about Davy and Jonesy's locker, as we have the stars of Davy and Jonesy's locker, Veronica Slowiska and Jalen Thora Brooks. Let me give you the rundown on Veronica first. Veronica is absolutely hilarious. If you don't follow her on TikTok, you definitely should. She's been in shows like What We Do in the Shadows, the Baroness Von Sketch Show, all kinds of great stuff. She's done stand-up across the city of Toronto and improv, when we get into a little bit about her origin story there. She all these like quirky little short TikTok skits that she does online, they are so funny. She has over 390,000 followers for her videos and has gotten over 13 million views. Her co-star is Jalen Thora Brooks, and she plays Jonesy. She's been the show Heartland, How We Ended Us. She's up and coming new talent. This show is her big break. She mentions in the interview that when she started filming the show, she hadn't graduated from Toronto Metropolitan University yet from the acting program. So she hadn't graduated, got the show, was filming. It all worked out for her. This is a breakout role for her. They're amazing. They're both very, very funny in this show. The first question got cut off in this interview, but it was actually from Ebony. Ebony was asking the first question, and the question was, what did you think of all the mayhem that was happening during the show, and do you think Ebony is unwell? That's the question I posed to Veronica and Jalen. Enjoy the interview. Here it is on the Canadian Comedy Hall of Fame podcast.
Is this a yes or no?
No.
So Ebony, not unwell. No,
we love Ebony. And
the first part of the question, were you scared of the content coming into this show?
I think that we're all kind of the same. We're in the same genre of weird. And so I think that's why these characters work for us, if that makes sense. Like,
absolutely.
It was more exciting for me that it's comforting to know that somebody has the same sense of humor as you. And you're like, okay, so maybe this stuff, it's funny. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's not just me. I'm not in this world by myself.
Like, we just truly, 2 minutes ago, just watched episode 9. And that one is probably the craziest one. And we really truly we go insane, and I don't think, like, if we weren't down for it, it like scared me in a good way where I was like, I've been there and I can do this. Mm-hmm. But everything generally made me excited rather than like terrified.
I agree.
The show is hilarious. I've watched the first 3 episodes, and I watched them with my daughter, who's 9. And it's funny because the show is like promoted as like this teen show, but it's like really for everyone. Like, I was laughing. She loved it. Like, she was a big fan. Shows that we get to screen early and shows that she can watch, I always get her to ask a question. So she has a question for you. And it's her question is, why do you share a locker? That blew her mind.
I had a locker by the jazz club.
Yeah.
And then I had a fight with Jazz Club. And this is all pretext.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so, and then I think just like, it really is just the proof of how codependent we are, Davy and Jonesy are. And we're like, well, listen, we have every class together. Obviously, let's just have the same locker, because mine was probably like on the other side of the school
and close to the jazz club, and she does not
talk to them.
It's so funny what kids are kind of like, they don't know yet. Like, she's 9 and she's like, doesn't know what's real and what's not in a show. She's like, you know, at my school, I'd never be allowed to share a locker. So she was like blown away by that aspect. How much fun. Yeah. It's funny what stands out to kids. Like, that's the thing. I'm like, not the lobster man at one point. Like, what? It's the locker thing that got, you know? How much fun was this to work on? It just, like, watching the show, it seems like an absolute blast. You guys are both great in it. Like, I love, like, the singing parts, the comedy parts. It was very funny. It just seemed like you were having the most fun on set.
It was an amazing time. And, like, our entire ensemble, like everyone that you see, we all get along, we all hang out. We actually just got to see everyone together for the first time since we shot, almost everyone. We're missing Dan and Emily, who play Cheryl and Mr. Schneider yesterday. But like,
it's so, it makes the acting so much easier when you're having such a good time. Like, everyone's happy to be there. We all want to be there. We have so much, we have all of our lunches together. We have so much time together. And
oh yeah. We have picnics every single lunch break. And yeah, honestly, like, yeah, like you said yesterday, just like all clicked again. And there's like no one I don't love. And I can confidently say that.
Yeah. It's a great cast. And everybody, like, everybody's a little bit of like a scene stealer in certain parts. Like, I noticed, like, the character, like Jocelyn, like very short. Was it Jocelyn? The one that lets the ants into the, wants to let the ants into the building at one point.
Joyce.
Sorry. Yeah. Joyce. I mean, very short, but like stealing the scene, like very funny.
Oh, yes.
From top to bottom. It was a great like casting too for the show. It was awesome.
They killed it.
Mm-hmm. One thing I like to do on this show, it's kind of like my own gripe against internet movie database, IMDb. I like to quiz people on their own IMDb pages to see how well you know yourself. So I'll start with you, Veronica. Do you know your first credit listed on IMDb?
I feel like it's either a short film I did called Viable. No. Wait. There's three answers. Either an episode of Degrassi, short film called Viable, or See No Evil, which was one of those like recreation crime things.
See No Evil is the correct answer. Yeah. In 2016, you did See No Evil. I looked into the show. This was like, it was like security cam footage of people committing crimes or something. Yes. And then you, yeah.
We shot in like Hamilton. It was like a non-union, like, I remember I took the GO train there to do it. And it was like very much like just started acting, fresh out of theater school kind of gig. And like, of course I played like a murdered girl, poor girl.
Absolutely.
That's usually people's like first, it's like somebody gone missing or somebody been murdered. That's usually the first, you know, credit that they get on IMDb.
Yeah.
When I talk to Americans, 9 times out of 10, it's like dead body on Law and Order. Like, that's what it is. Like,
truly, you got to do it.
Yeah. At least once. Jalen, do you know your first credit?
I think it's how we ended us, Grant Harvey?
No, it's a short film called Proximity.
Yep, correct. Did you actually, fun fact about that, I didn't do it. I'm in a trailer. They like got funding to shoot a trailer and never shot the full thing. I don't know how it ended up on my IMDb.
Oh wow, that's wild. So the show, the film never got made?
No, and I'm not in it. I don't even speak in the trailer. I'm in it and I'm like crying in bed.
Yeah.
And that's it. A credit.
You're in it
I got a credit. I don't even know how that works. I don't even know how they would get. Anyways, yeah, it's not made. Maybe one day, hopefully for them, that'd be great.
So I watched the trailer because I'm very thorough with this. You're in it for a few seconds, but it alludes to you having a big role in this short film. Like, the trailer alludes that you're the person they're looking for. And it's actually a really captivating trailer. I was like, I want to watch this film. It was really well done.
They were great. Everyone on that set was amazing, but it was literally like, it was one night. I was there for like 2 hours. Yeah. Crazy.
For like a two second shot. Yes. Jalen, this was kind of like your, I guess, like coming out role. Because you just finished university. What was like the time frame between finishing school and filming this project?
I booked this show in my last, I was still in school. I was in my last semester of my last year. And I was also like the worst student ever because I dropped out in my third year because it was the pandemic and we were online. I was like, I can't do this anymore. I was losing my mind. And so I dropped out my third year and then they were like, hey, like, you can come back. We'll put you back with your class if you want to. You just have to do one more year. And I was like, and we were in person at that time. I was like, okay, I'll go back. And then I go back and then immediately I'm like, I'm so sorry. I have to leave again. Like, I got it.
Yeah.
So this was like, I think I missed maybe the last 3 or 4 weeks of school, but I still graduated. My grades were good enough, but I still graduated.
Awesome. Well, there you go. That's all you need. The certificate. That's what makes it. And that's funny how you were like,
done.
Brian, where did your comedy journey start? Because I feel like we have a lot of like, just like I did like my Instagram, I was like, oh, we know a lot of the same people. So you started like Toronto improv scene?
I did. Yeah, I did. I went to school. I went to two acting schools in Toronto. And then I did the Second City Conservatory when I was younger. And then that put me into like the improv and sketch kind of world. And yeah, I imagine we have a ton of mutual friends. And like, then I just started performing like literally pre-pandemic, like 7 to 8 times a week, like doing improv shows at like Bad Dog and Comedy yeah. Bar. And like, yeah, I was really, that became like my acting school for, like I stopped taking classes and I was like, oh, this is actually helping me be present and listen. And also kind of like, I just felt way more creative doing that kind of stuff rather than like doing scene study for me personally. And then, yeah, mm-hmm. I looked at myself after theater school and I was like, okay, at the time I was blonde as in the show. And I was like, okay, I'm a, like blonde, I'm a 5'2" blonde girl. So I look like everybody else in the world. How am I gonna do this? And then I was like, okay, I'm like kind of funny. And I was always like a comedy nerd. And I just like really just fell in love with it. And it really has freed me from like really thinking about like looks and all that kind of stuff that kind of goes into like the industry, which like, you know, I still am a normal person to think about that. But comedy really like is just like a joy for me.
You're very funny. I saw this one joke that you posted. It's like years ago. I was like, did you do stand up for a little bit?
I like, okay. Yeah. Like, you know how people are like, I tried stand up. I tried it 3 times. I'm like, you haven't tried stand up. You know what I mean? Like I tried it like after the pandemic because we couldn't do group stuff. And I was such like a team player. So I did stand up for like, I've done it maybe like 20 times in my life. And it like, I don't know. I'm so now I'm performing, you know, going on tour very soon. And like now I do kind of my own spin on things. So I do like my own characters. I kind of host like mm-hmm. a variety show. I sing songs. I do an impression of Bo Burnham, like just like dumb things. So yeah, I like have tried stand up, but not, it's never like stuck with me, but I respect stand-ups and I'm friends with stand-ups, but for me I just can't be myself.
I saw the one joke you posted, or maybe somebody else posted, but it was very funny. It was you're like, daylight savings time, what about checking, like checking account or something, like that was the joke. And I was like, and then it was like that you had like the Seinfeld music in the post. It was awesome. It's a great joke. I was like,
yes. Yeah, it was that was definitely an open mic, and I was like, well, that's my sense of humor, is like more, it's more of the in-between. It's less about the joke and more about the sitting in the uncomfortable parts of failing, which I find fascinating.
Yeah, I actually like quite enjoy that. When something, when you think something is so funny, you've like written it, you've like, this is gonna, and then it doesn't work, is sometimes a little more enjoyable.
It is, I totally agree. And then you find something, that's kind of my whole shtick, you know, is like the people trying really hard at something and then failing and then still keeping on going and trying to create something in there. Like that's where I find the most, what's the most like interesting, I think, to me.
Absolutely. Jalen, where did your like, where you decided like, I want to get into acting, like this is the path? Do you have like an influence or someone, because you grew up, you're Canadian as well, like growing up, did you have any like Canadian influences? You're like, this is what I want to do.
I was an only child and I grew up with a single parent, and I had a TV in my room because I had a single parent who was very busy all the time. And I watched a lot of TV. I'm gonna choose that.
You can swear on this.
I watched, yeah. Okay, I watched a fuck ton of television. I watched so much TV. And like now we're kind of getting to a point where we realize that that's not good for kids. But for me, I feel like it actually really fostered a creativity, because I remember I'd watch these shows and we'd go to school and we'd be like, okay, let's play this show. You'll be that person. You'll be that person. We'd like write an episode of this show and perform it like At the time, you're playing a game. You don't know you're performing, but that was my favorite thing to do. I would watch TV and I would make my own episodes with my friends and I had characters that I love and that I like to pretend to be. And that kind of stuck. My mom put me in every sport and I was so horribly mediocre until I started theater. And it was the only thing that I enjoyed the sports, but theater was the first thing that I enjoyed and I was also okay at.
Yeah.
So it's just always stuck. It's the only thing that I've never stopped being interested in it. It stays continually interesting and challenging for me. So
did you have one show that like really where you're like, oh, that show was pivotal in my life?
I hate to say it. I loved Glee.
Glee was great.
Like, I had the backpack, I had the lunch bag, I had the t-shirts, I had the bedspread.
Like, you have a profile picture where it's like Glee and you edit, you do this, then you edit the G and that.
Yes.
And the L and the E.
Yeah. That was clever.
I was Glee. I watched a lot of that show, which is actually, rewatching as an adult is so clever. And Jane Lynch in that show is one of the funniest characters in any TV show I've ever seen in my life. She's so good. And so that show really actually like was a giant influence for me. And at the time I wanted to sing too. Didn't happen for good reason.
Glee was great. I was like probably like early 20s secretly mm-hmm. watching Glee, you know what I mean? But it was awesome. I have one more question for both of you. This is the question I ask everyone. This is the Canadian Comedy Hall of Fame podcast. I know you don't know who's in and who's out of the Canadian Comedy Hall of Fame, but if you had to say this person is a Canadian Comedy Hall of Famer, who would you say?
Dead or alive?
Dead or alive, doesn't matter. They could be like 22 and a future Hall of Famer or somebody who's put it together an amazing career.
Okay. I love like John Candy, but and Norm. Well, rest in peace to both of them. truly. Love them both. Norm McDonald. And then future Ben Stager, I think, is doing something truly different in Canada. And he's one of my great friends and I get to perform with him a lot, but I think he's like on to something. And he's going to be on Canada's Got Talent this year. That's announced.
Oh my God.
But he is so meta and like such like, who is that? Like Kaufman, where like he's become the character and he's ahead of his time, and I'm telling you, get on the Ben Stager train.
Amazing. That's what I love hearing, like names that I've seen the name, haven't seen the work, but that's definitely somebody I'll check out for sure. Jalen, who do you have?
It's actually someone who had like a, I guess you'd call it a guest star role on our show, who I had seen before and didn't know a lot about her. I hope I'm saying her name correctly. Lisa Parrison?
Lisa Merchant.
Oh, I don't think she knows how big of a fan I am, because I met her and I chatted with her and I got to know her a little bit, and then I started being able to see more of her show. And I was like, you are hilarious.
Oh yeah,
she is so funny and so smart, and smart in a way that I like. It's some people who have, I really respect people who have who know how to be comedic in a way that I could never even attempt to, and she has that, where I'm like, how does your brain work?
Oh yeah, she's
hilarious.
Superstar. Yeah, I saw her years ago, and then on set I was too nervous to say
really
that. Yeah, oh yeah, I get so like I pretend I don't know them so that I just come off as rude, which is awesome.
Yeah, that works too. Thanks so much for doing this. The show's great. I love it. My 9-year-old daughter loves it. We can't wait to see the rest of it. March 22nd, Prime Video in Canada, Hulu in the US. Veronica and Jalen, thanks so much for doing this. I really appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having us.
That's it. That's all. That's episode 41. Once again, let's remind you that Davey and Jonesy's Locker is out now. If you're in Canada, you can watch it on Prime Video. And if you're in the United States of America, you can watch it on Hulu. It's a hilarious show that, like, honestly, the whole family can watch. So thanks to Veronica, thanks to Jalen, and thanks to the creator of the show, Ebony, for coming on. That was a ton of fun. That was great putting this episode together and talking to them. They were all very, very funny. Also, don't forget that carnivoreclub.ca Co, our sponsor for this episode. Head to their website now, pick from one of their three boxes, get it delivered, the subscription box. It's amazing. All your charcuterie, cured meats, jerky needs from Carnivore Club. Check them out. That's it. Big episodes coming. Thanks for listening. If you can, hit the subscribe button, rate us on whatever platform you listen to, whether it's Apple, Spotify, iHeartRadio. Give us a 5-star if you enjoy the show. For the Canadian Comedy Hall of Fame podcast, I'm Chad Noonan.